This podcast is brought to you by the Eden Pure Thunderstorm Air Purifier. The three-pack is back. The three-pack is a great value, and the top three uses for the air purifier are to eliminate odors, allergens, and air pollutants. Get the three-pack today at EdenPureDeals.com and put in code word Howie3.
The numbers are in. Listeners are voting often and early for Grace Curley, just like they did for her adopted grandfather. From year one to number one.
Make it so, number one.
The Millennial with the Mic is the most listened to midday show in Boston. You can read Grace's work in the Boston Herald, the Spectator, and the Daily Mail. Now, live from the Aviva Trattoria studio.
Get ready, pal.
It's Boston's number one midday show, The Grace Curley Show.
Especially Grace. Grace, stand up.
And welcome, everyone, to The Grace Curley Show. I am guest hosting for one more day. Toby Leary here sitting in for the vacationing Grace Curley. And I am glad you're here. And one of today's sad notes, if you will, was not noticing this morning a text from Jared saying, "Are we on for 2A Tuesday today?"
Starting to worry there for a minute. You never responded.
I guess he doesn't like me anymore. But then I remembered. I said, "Oh yeah, it's 2A Tuesday on the Grace Curley Show today." So yes, I'm the gun guy sitting in for Grace, and we're going to talk some guns today because. As you know, guns are in the news almost daily now, and there's some good news around guns for a change, which I'm really happy about. And I want to read to you first something about today, this day in history that I think you will all find fascinating, or as fascinating as I do. But this comes from gun websites, a buddy of mine online, and it's Samuel Colt. July 19th, 1814 through January 10th, 1862, invented the modern locking bolt revolver. First practical revolver, the first practical repeating firearm, and the first to use interchangeable parts. So there you have it, folks. This day in history, Samuel Colt, July 19th, 1814. And he kept pursuing manufacturing. He failed at a lot of his first early gun attempts. And I remember, I think it was, he was 13 when he was working on a fishing vessel and he carved a cylinder and a hammer out of wood while he was like 13 years old. So he had the dream of creating the revolver at a young age. He sold nitrous oxide to raise money and learn salesmanship. And so I guess he was passing out laughing gas, right? Yeah. Innovated in manufacturing with interchangeable parts, and he died one of the richest people in America. Fascinating. What else is interesting is the revolver was, let me back up a minute, but this guy was making ghost guns. Can you believe it? Think about that. He wasn't in business to make guns at the time. He was a private citizen, home building firearms for his own personal pleasure, and then ultimately made a business out of it. If he lived today, you know, what the current administration wants to do.
So, you know, I don't know what the hell's going on here.
What the current administration would want to do with him is say he is out manufacturing ghost guns that nobody knows about. They're not serialized. The government doesn't know about them. And that would be...
Go get him!
Yeah, they would round him up and... He would have never died the richest man in America, one of the richest men in America, because he'd have been doing a bid for making ghost guns if the Brandon administration has his way. Which brings me to another thought topic. By the way, the number here is 844-500-4242 if you want to jump in and talk guns and politics and everything else around it. We did a free-for-all show yesterday. We'll probably narrow the focus a little bit today, but I'm happy to go wherever you want the conversation to go. 844-500-4242. Along those lines, the EPA, the Supreme Court ruled a couple weeks ago against the EPA and the Biden administration, which is very fascinating because This could have ramifications for the gun industry. Now, how the heck does the EPA affect the gun industry? But look at what they ruled on. They ruled that the EPA could not make sweeping changes to regulatory law, basically. They were saying by them making big regulatory changes, they are enacting law, and they're not the legislature. So I'm going to read real quick. This is on Ammo Land. It says, extraordinary grants of regulatory authority are rarely accomplished through modest words, vague terms, or subtle device. Whitman 531 U.S. 468. Nor does Congress typically use oblique or elliptical language to empower an agency to make a radical or fundamental change to a statutory scheme. This seems to apply to changes in the ATF's changing regulatory stance on pistol braces. Not only that, but they did it with bump stocks. They did it with, they're trying to do it with forced reset triggers. They're trying to do it with home-built firearms, et cetera, et cetera. The ATF reversed what is said about pistol braces previously. The ATF is changing their definition and changing the law. So here's the thing, like when the ATF makes these regulatory changes, it isn't like, some little nuance that, oh, okay, they have to manufacture them slightly different or something like that. No, people's lives and livelihoods are ultimately at stake, because if they run afoul of these regulatory changes, they can do serious time in federal prison. In fact, I read on Rapid Fire about this guy in, I think it was in New Mexico, this guy Mejia, who an undercover agent who was actually an illegal alien trying to buy some good behavior time went undercover for the FBI. And it was funny because it was the FBI's anti-terrorism task force that did this sting as part of a project keep, neighborhood watchdog group and keep neighborhood safe type of thing, where the anti-terrorism task force of the ATF goes to this guy who's made a friend and he wants to bring his buddy over his house and shoot in the backyard. And he's got this CZ Scorpion pistol, which is, legal for him to own. He has two suppressors, which is legal in that state. He's paid the $200 tax stamp for each suppressor and gone through the regulatory nonsense from the NFA branch of the ATF. And then he decided to attach a stock to his pistol, which all of a sudden illegally made it into a short-barreled rifle. He's on his own property, shooting in his own backyard range. He has 5 acres. And he takes this guy who's wearing undercover surveillance equipment, a wire, a video recording device, shooting to his house, and he's showing him, and then the guy wanted to take a picture, and he said, "Ah, no, don't take a picture, because technically this is now a short-barreled rifle." And by the way, this guy was a former police dispatcher. He worked for a local police department. He was a good, upstanding citizen, a father, and never ran afoul of the law. But he made the fateful decision one day to put a stock on his pistol. Now, this goes to the crux of the matter here that we're talking about with the ATF's decision to make these pistol braces, which is not a stock, even though it functions exactly like a stock. You can shoulder fire it, and the ATF has gone back and forth about whether you can or whether you can't, whether you can't. So right now it's technically legal that you can shoulder fire a pistol that has a stabilizing brace on it, and it's not considered a stock. But this guy decided to take a aftermarket stock and put it on his gun, and they did an undercover sting. Think of the tens of thousands of dollars of taxpayer money to set this guy up and, make sure he's put away. And sure enough, they convict him. He pleads out. He goes, "Look, I know I willingly did this," but at the end of the day, it's a victimless crime. The guy was shoulder firing a pistol in his backyard on his own personal range. And because of this victimless crime, the judge threw the book at him, and he is going to serve 21 months behind in prison in a federal penitentiary. I dare to say that there are criminals out there, career criminals, especially in New York City, in Los Angeles, Massachusetts, in a lot of the, Chicago, that get caught with firearms in the commission of a crime where there is an actual victim that don't do 21 months in prison. And this man who has been a fine, upstanding citizen who, you know, has a pistol stock, has a stock, which is not a crime to own, and a pistol, which is not a crime to own, and he's already paid $400 in federal tax stamps to the NFA branch for the two suppressors that he owns. He's not a prohibited person. He owns firearms. He has a concealed carry permit, and he puts the stock on, and now he's going to do 21 months behind bars in a federal penitentiary. So this is the implications that regulatory agencies have when they change this type of scheme. So you got the ATF, who is about to bring out new regulations in August on this pistol brace regulation, where they're going to consider it now that you've made a short-barreled rifle, the same as this guy got jammed up on. So it has real-life implications, real-world consequences, and they're not an elected body. They are not the legislature. They are not having their proposed legislation signed into law by the executive branch. They are an agency that is appointed. They're a regulatory agency that is ultimately making law. And there's real life consequences to that action. So it goes on to say that the ATF estimates 3 million stabilizing braces have been sold, and 3 million stabilizing braces since 2013. Well, it's funny because they obviously didn't consult with the groups that make these, who have said that they have sold at least 12 to 15 million of these stabilizing braces. So that's not a small amount. We'll talk about this on the other side. 844-500-4242. This is the Grace Curley Show. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Grace Curley Show.
A tiara when I came in here, because if you happen upon it, will you have Lady Pennyface retrieve it and send it post hence?
She's the epitome of class, style, and sophistication. She's Grace Curley.
And yes, she is, but I am not, and I am Toby Leary sitting in for Grace, who will be back with you all tomorrow. But today's poll question is brought to you by Perfect Smiles. Don't be fooled by imposters with similar names. If you're unhappy with your smile, you need to visit Dr. Bruce Houghton in Nashua. Call 1-844-A-PERFECT-SMILE or visit perfectsmiles.com. Jared, what is the poll question and what are the results so far?
Following talk in New York and LA, when do you think the mask mandates will return to Massachusetts and Maine? For the fall? Forever. Or it won't happen.
Oh, I'm praying it won't happen, but I do feel... we don't like to be outdone by New York and California here in Massachusetts. So I'm going to say this fall, they're going to push it down our throats.
Yes, 81% agree for the fall. 14% say it won't happen. 5% say forever.
I, for one, will not comply.
No, non-compliance is the only way out of this now.
Yes, I agree. I agree. Here we are. But anyway, all right, we'll talk about that in a little bit. As depressing as that whole subject is. And I'm for it if you want to do it willingly. Go for it. I like to laugh at people driving around in their car by themselves with their masks on all day. You provide wonderful forms of entertainment. But anyway, get back to what I was saying before the break. ATF has observed that the development and production of rifle barrel weapons with stabilizing braces has become more prevalent in the firearms industry than that consequently. Requests for classifications for this kind of firearm design have also increased. All right, so listen to this. This is a dissent by Justice Gorsuch on a decision of the Supreme Court to not accept a bump stock case. He makes a plea for the rule of law rather than a rule by the administration. Justice Gorsuch on bump stocks. Chevron's application in this case may be doubtful for other reasons too. The agency used to tell everyone that bump stocks don't qualify as machine guns. Now it says the opposite. The law hasn't changed, only an agency's interpretation of it. And these days, it will sometimes seem agencies change their statutory interpretations almost as often as elections change their administrations. And the pistol brace issue itself has gone back and forth at least three or four times just since the invention of the pistol brace in 2013. It has been that, like, back and forth to the point where you can do it, you can't, you can do it, you can't. And so I agree. I think that, you know, when they ruled on this for the EPA, a lot of the people in the gun industry were like, here's looking at you, ATF. So let's hope. But Zebra, you're first on the Grace Curley Show today. How are you today?
Yeah, I've got a couple questions. I don't know if you can stay on for them, if you'll be able to answer my second question. But the first, I'm reading of these articles regarding the SIG P320, and it's a striker-fired. I've always been a hammer-fired type of guy, mainly because, you know, my accuracy isn't affected by the longer pull. I kind of like to be able to see it, and for me, I understand the safety mechanisms in it. But there's now two cases, a case in New Hampshire that's being allowed to go forward, and two experts that said it could fire. They don't say it did, but they said it could fire without pulling the trigger. Can you clear up, do you have any insight onto either strike or fire? Because they did the same thing with Glock. When Glock came out, people were accidentally discharging, and I'm usually the person that thinks, well, it's usually the hand, not the gun, that's making the mistake. But things happen when you redesign. Can you, I've got a second question for you, but I'll let you answer that. If you can shed any light on it, please do for
me. Yes, you're absolutely right, Zebra. There is some lawsuits going forward, specifically against the SIG 320. And they, you know, I talked about it at length yesterday with the whole drop test where they were able to fire when they were dropped. And there's still some other ones, mostly involving law enforcement agencies that use this 320. And so they are going forward, let's put it that way. But the striker-fired weapon has been around since the 80s when, well, even before that, but really became mainstream with Glock. And has proven itself to be a very safe design. In fact, right in Glock, they call them safe action pistols. So there's two redundancies. There's a firing pin block in all modern firearms that prevent the firing pin from hitting the primer if it's dropped or bumped or something to that effect. And then there's also a trigger in most cases, safety. The SIG 320 does not have that. And I opined about that yesterday as well, how I wish they did have that trigger safety on it. I think it would be one more little redundancy without having to go to a thumb safety. I understand people's hesitancy behind the striker-fired guns, but I do think it's largely unfounded. In this day and age, you get a modern striker-fired gun, it's a very safe weapon. The hammer-fired gun has been around since we talked about Samuel Colt in the opening of the show, 1860s, when he invented the revolver and that premise. And even those have had to change because they used to carry the Colt revolver on an empty chamber because the hammer would be resting on the firing pin. So if you hit the back of the hammer, the gun would go off. So they've changed all that too with transfer bar safeties and revolvers, et cetera, et cetera. So as guns evolve, they get more safe. You know what I mean? They're not, so it's not the same guns that we've had forever. The technology has evolved. And real quick, if you want to give me the second question, Zebra. All right, I think we lost Zebra. That's all right. David, you're next. Never mind. We'll stay tuned and stay on the line if you want. I will talk to you on the other side. We will be right back. This is the Grace Curley Show.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. I'm Toby Leary and I'm sitting in for Grace. And today is the extended play of 2A Tuesday. So we had Zebra on the line. We had Zebra on the line before the break and I lost you there. So what was the second half of your question, bud?
Yeah, I lost you too, but I'll check out the replay. It won't bore everyone else that got you. I had to turn my radio off for the echo effect. I didn't want to give it you. But the second question was, what happened to this person who says it's firing? And I'll take that one striker fire is not like another striker fire. You got an individual weapon. Check it out. But and we'll see what the trial comes up with anyway. But are there any... Because this one fired supposedly in the holster.
Right.
And that's always where I've said, well, you know, people that put it in their waistband, in their pocket, I go, but when something fires in a holster, that's when I really sit up. But are there any ballistic holsters out there that will prevent a round from coming out?
No, definitely not. What you do need to do is make sure you get a good holster that completely covers your trigger. And I have no idea what the holster situation was, you know, and especially in law enforcement, there are certain types of holsters that have level 3 retention, and there's, you know, retention devices to keep the gun in the holster. I don't know if there was some, you know, something that was in the holster with it when the guy had, you know, so there's a number of questions I just don't know the answer to. And so I can't really comment on that. But the one thing I do know is, if you have a factory striker-fired gun, for the most part, you're very safe with that gun if you have a good quality holster that completely covers your trigger. I've seen people that carry guns without holsters. They're completely insane, if you ask me. And some of them with bad holsters. And some people during classes I've even seen that don't look the gun back to the holster. So there could be a shirt stuffed in the holster as they're trying to jam their gun back in, or something else that, you know, someone else's piece of brass that's got flown into the holster or something like that. And I've also seen and heard of aftermarket triggers that have like a screw that holds the trigger shoe in back itself out during a full day of training. And that screw kind of catches the inside of the holster when it's being reholstered. So those are the times I've seen, you know, striker-fired guns go bang when they shouldn't. But it's usually some sort of foreign interference in the holster or in the trigger guard. So I have tested all the guns that I have personally carried extensively without ammunition. I'll stuff my T-shirt through the trigger and then I'll reholster it and see if I can get it to go click. And I've done that several different ways. And I've not until I'm satisfied that it doesn't go click, will I carry that gun. So there you go. But I wouldn't be afraid of a modern striker-fired gun in its original stock condition in this day and age. But thanks for the call, Zebra. You bring up a good point. And David, you've been on hold forever. Go ahead, David. Got some questions about gun licensing.
Yes. Thanks for taking my call. I really appreciate it. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to give you a long story short is I've been issued my LTC Class A license since 2008 two times. I first applied in 2008. I was granted my right to carry, and I renewed. I believe it's 6 years every. I think that's the issuance in Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
But my most recent expiration after carrying my license basically for 12 years, I applied for a renewal, and I was denied through some blemishes on my record that happened over 40 years ago. And it wasn't a felony. It wasn't a violent crime. It was just being with someone that, and, you know, I was involved with it, you know, no denial there. But it was a petty crime. It was like a vending machine type of thing. We were young kids. We were stupid. But I'm really troubled that I can't renew after being, legally licensed for the past 12 years. And I'm not sure what recourse I have. I looked into how to get my record expunged, but if you have a DWI, you're denied to be able to do that. So I don't know what
there is.
Why one thing.
Yeah, David, let me hold you right there because I think I understand the question. But the, there is a way to get, reopen that case if necessary. I would seek a good, competent 2A attorney in this state. There's several I can recommend, and I would reach out to one of them. But there is a firearms review licensing board that you can appeal to. You could also appeal to district court. So if they've given you a written denial, take that and go to, I have a suspicion that it was more of a suitability issue. So they found a way for them to deny you. And this is exactly what this Bruin decision attacks, if you will, and deals with. So I would definitely seek out a good, competent attorney that's well-versed in Massachusetts law, and I would reapply, absolutely, especially in light of this new Bruin case that's come down the pipeline. So I understand your frustration, especially having your license for two consecutive expiration periods, but I would definitely reapply. So good luck with that, David, but seek out a good, competent attorney. They'll be able to help you. At the worst case, you'll have to get that case reopened. Joe, you're next on the Grace Curley Show with Toby Leary on 2A Tuesday. Go ahead, Joe.
Yes, good afternoon, Toby. Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure.
My theory kind of piggybacks on your last call. Now, they encouraged millions of people to sign up for the PTSD for as a disability, and, you know, for whatever percentage you wanted to be disabled, you know, up to 100% or as little as 25%. Now, that goes on your record. Medical record. Is that something that can use against you to prohibit you from retaining or carrying a firearm?
No. PTSD is not a diagnosis that would prohibit you from having a firearm. It is a medical diagnosis. And the only way they can prohibit you from having a firearm is if you've been adjudicated mentally ill and are a threat to yourself or somebody else. So that's the only, PTSD does not apply. There's plenty of people out there that have, you know, some sort of anxiety or depression or something to that effect that are not a threat to themselves or others, and therefore their rights are not infringed on. And so, yeah, that is not, so, but I mean, the scary part of red flag laws are that, you know, could they expand into, you know, whatever they feel meets the definition. And so, you know, as of right now, they can't deny you your right to keep and bear arms if you've been diagnosed as PTSD or by the military or whatever. But, you know, I certainly don't trust the government that's trying to disarm us at every turn. And, you know, this is one of the ways that they will probably work it into the grand scheme of things on taking guns away. So let's hope it doesn't happen. But it certainly could, you know what I mean, down the road. And, you know, the biggest question with all of that, and you allude to it a little bit here, is due process. You know, where is the due process in all of this? And so, you know, the Fifth Amendment is that no person shall be deprived of their life or property without due process. So that is really what it comes down to, is that's my biggest complaint about all these red flag laws. And thanks for the call, Joe, by the way, is that, you know, there's no due process in any of this. Through the word of somebody else, you know, if somebody suspects that you might go commit a crime or might go do something, now they have a legal avenue to come and seize guns. You don't have a right to confront your accuser. They can, you know, it opens up Pandora's box. And in my opinion, it violates the First Amendment, the Second Amendment, the Fourth Amendment, the Fifth Amendment, the Sixth Amendment, and the 16th Amendment, the 14th Amendment. So, you know, how on earth can you say that this isn't happening when somebody suspects and you don't even have a right to know who it is and you don't even know that it's happening, and all of a sudden here they come to round up your guns as a preemptive measure? So yeah, it's a definitely a scary thing. And you know, yesterday we talked a little bit about the founders and how they felt about the Second Amendment, and I want to read to you three quotes. One is, "The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. A well-regulated militia composed of the body of people trained to arms is the best and most natural defense of a free country." That's James Madison in the Annals of Congress, June 8th, 1789. That was obviously a good argument, a big argument for putting the Second Amendment in the Bill of Rights. And then necessity is the plea for every infringement of human freedom, is the argument of tyrants. Remember yesterday, why the AR-15, right? We talked about the necessity. Like, nobody needs, and you hear that from politicians all the time, nobody needs an AR-15. Nobody needs 30 rounds. Nobody needs an assault weapon. Nobody needs a semi-automatic this or that. Necessity is the plea for every infringement of human freedom. It is the argument of tyrants. It is the creed of slaves. William Pitt the Younger, speech in the House of Commons on November 18th, 1783. And last but not least, guard with jealous attention the public liberty. Suspect everyone who approaches that jewel. Unfortunately, nothing will preserve it but downright force. Whenever you give up that force, you are ruined. The great object is that every man be armed. Everyone who is able might have a gun. Patrick Henry, speech to the Virginia Ratifying Convention, June 5th, 1778, who obviously had the most historic speech, give me liberty or give me death, right? So I'm going to read a couple more of those too as the show goes on. 844-500-4242 is the number here if you want to be a part of the call, be a part of the show. And we will be back after this. You're listening to an extended play of 2A Tuesday on the Grace Curley Show. More.
Follow Grace on Twitter at @G_Curley. Follow Grace on Twitter at @G_Curley.
Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. I'm your guest host, Toby Leary. If you want to be a part of the show today, call 844-500-4242. We can talk all things guns, politics, and news of the day. And before the break, we were talking all about, gun control, et cetera, PTSD, and some of the good news around guns, unless you've been living under a rock the past few days, that, you know, they're starting to actually give recognition to this guy who, the 22-year-old man who shot and killed an armed active shooter in a mall in Indiana. And, the law enforcement came out and called him a hero. And a lot of people are calling him a good Samaritan, but not everybody's exactly happy with this. It might surprise you that there's people that are upset that this man was carrying a gun in a mall. And, they're also mad that they're calling him a good Samaritan. What was it, I'll just read to you. This is a Fox article here that says, the critics are lashing out after a man carrying a pistol stopped a mass shooting at an Indiana shopping mall, arguing that the man should not be called a good Samaritan. The term good Samaritan came from a Bible passage of a man from Samaria who stopped on the other side of the road to help a man who was injured and ignored, wrote CBS for traffic anchor Justin Collar on Twitter Monday. I cannot believe that we live in a world where the term can equally apply to someone killing someone. My God. Well, let's just break that down for a second. What was the good Samaritan in the Bible doing? He actually went across the road and helped the man that nobody else came to the aid of, right? And saved the man's life. Well, this guy in the mall goes to the aid of every man, woman, and child in this mall to end the threat. And as he's confronting this psycho with the gun, he's, with his other hand, urging people to go, flee, get out, get them out behind him. And I think it's the most perfect picture of the word Good Samaritan. And it is a man who is willing to inconvenience his life, because let's put it this way, that guy's life has changed forever now that he has had to fire a gun in defense of somebody else. Could he and his girlfriend have slipped out the back and made it out and lived to tell about it and watched the horrific news story that night? Yes, but he chose to get involved and defend these people's lives. And thankfully, the media is actually on network news, even continuing with the story of the hero. But the gun grabbers, this sets their agenda back a little bit. This sets the gun confiscation agenda back a little bit. They had the momentum going, for crying out loud. They had Buffalo and then Uvalde, and they stand on the bodies and say, this is why nobody needs blah, 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 fill in the blank. And they felt like they had momentum going. And here's another episode that should have worked in their favor, but this guy had to step in and shoot this guy dead. And you know what? As more and more people carry, Indiana's a constitutional carry state, but which, by the way, there's 25 states that are constitutional carry states. We had a major landmark ruling by the Supreme Court and, you know, a few weeks ago about the Bruin versus New York State rifle and pistol case, where no state can no longer, and we're going to talk about this a little in the next hour, can no longer infringe upon your rights because you can't show good cause. I think this shooting in the mall ends any good cause argument forever, although the Bruin decision did as well. But this is the perfect example of good cause. Why, you know, the saying has always been for people like myself who've carried a gun for a long time is better to have it and not need it than need it and not have it. And this is exactly the situation where this guy was in the right place at the right time. And because he was willing to get involved as a good Samaritan and come to the aid of people he didn't know and willing to let his life be altered forever, by coming to the aid of people he did not know, he is a hero. He is a good Samaritan. And apparently they just can't handle that. And they would like to see the narrative continue to you know, be that guns bad and anyone who has a gun, especially in a gun-free zone, and you weren't supposed to have it in this mall, which is tantamount to you know, a trespassing charge where someone could ask you to leave if they didn't want you there. That's basically the way these type of gun-free zones in private practice work, even in Massachusetts. So anyway, some other good news is the bodega worker in Manhattan who defended himself with a knife, when this guy comes behind the counter and assaults him because he won't sell a candy or something to his girlfriend whose welfare card was being declined. She called her man and he came and attacks the guy and he defends himself with a knife and he gets charged for involuntary manslaughter. Good news, that's going away. Hopefully we'll see more good news as it comes. All right, more after this. You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. Don't go away.
The Polka Dots.